Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Public Nuisance Claims Against Carbon Dioxide Emitters Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On June 20th, 2011, the Supreme Court announced its decision in American Electric Power Company versus Connecticut. The question in this case was whether plaintiffs, which were several states, the City of New York, and three private land trusts, can maintain federal common law public nuisance claims against carbon dioxide emitters, which included four private power companies and the federal Tennessee Valley Authority. In an opinion delivered by Justice Ginsburg, the court held by a vote of 8-0 that the Clean Air Act and the Environmental Protection Agency action that the act authorizes displaces the claims the plaintiffs seek to pursue. Chief Justice Roberts and Justices Scalia, Kennedy, Breyer, and Kagan joined Justice Ginsburg's opinion. Justice Alito filed an opinion concurring in part and concurring in the judgment, which Justice Thomas joined. Justice Sotomayor took no part in the consideration or decision of the case. To discuss the case, we have Megan L. Brown, who is a partner at Wiley Rhine LLP. Ms. Brown is on an amicus brief in support of the petitioners. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Ms. Brown.
On June 20th, the Supreme Court decided a closely watched case that sought to use public nuisance doctrine to address global warming. Plaintiffs in American Electric Power versus Connecticut asked a federal court to enter an injunction compelling energy companies to reduce their carbon dioxide emissions. After an oral argument in which all justices seemed uneasy with the case, the court unanimously rejected the use of federal courts to abate global warming. In this podcast, I'll provide a bit of background on this and other global warming nuisance cases, describe what were the issues before the court, analyze what the court decided, and identify the important takeaways. At bottom, the Supreme Court sent a strong message that courts are not the proper decision makers about how to assign responsibility for or address global warming, though it left some important questions unanswered, ensuring that litigation like this will continue in some form. American Electric Power, or AEP, is one of several cases brought in various federal courts in which plaintiffs argue that large electric power and utility companies have created a nuisance by emitting carbon dioxide and contributing to global warming. At the trial court level, all the cases have met the same fate, dismissal by judges who recognize that suits seeking to apportion responsibility for global warming are beyond the court's institutional and constitutional capacity. In Kivalina versus Exxon, an Alaskan village sued energy companies for hundreds of millions of dollars for the alleged effects of global warming on their land. That case was dismissed, but is on appeal to the Ninth Circuit and awaits argument. In Comer versus Murphy Oil, a class of Mississippi residents sued dozens of oil and gas companies for hundreds of millions of dollars in damages resulting from Hurricane Katrina, which allegedly was intensified by global warming. Originally dismissed, a panel of the Fifth Circuit reversed, but that was vacated and the case was dismissed. In AEP, eight states, New York City, and three nonprofit land trusts sued four private companies and the Tennessee Valley Authority in the Southern District of New York, arguing that those entities are the five largest emitters of carbon dioxide in the United States and that these activities jeopardized public lands, infrastructure, and health. As a result, plaintiffs sought an injunction from the federal court in New York, capping emissions and ordering specific reductions over a period of at least a decade. The SDNY dismissed the case, finding that it presented a political question not suitable for judicial resolution because, among other things, it lacked manageable standards and would require the judge to make a decision on a policy matter before the accountable branches had weighed in. On appeal to the Second Circuit, a panel including then-Judge Sotomayor heard the case. While that case was pending, a lot happened in the area of law and global warming. The EPA was sued over its response to greenhouse gases, and the Supreme Court decided in Mass versus EPA that the Clean Air Act authorized the EPA to regulate carbon dioxide as a pollutant. Subsequently, the Second Circuit panel, now missing Judge Sotomayor, who had been appointed to the Supreme Court, reversed the dismissal. The panel characterized the case as just an ordinary tort suit, well within the traditional competence of federal judges and not barred by the political question doctrine. The panel went on to consider and reject other arguments presented by the energy companies. For example, it concluded that plaintiffs had constitutional standing and rejected the argument that their claims of harm were too attenuated from the actions identified. The panel also found that federal common law of nuisance provided a cause of action based on older cases recognizing causes of action for interstate pollution, which the panel concluded could encompass the emission of carbon dioxide. Finally, the panel determined that the claims were not displaced by congressional or EPA action. In essence, the panel disagreed with the energy companies and the district court about the difficulty of the issues presented, concluding that courts regularly interpret tort law like nuisance and frequently engage in complex fact-finding. The standing political question, federal common law, and displacement questions were presented to the Supreme Court by the energy companies, and the court granted certiorari. Justice Sotomayor was recused. The Obama administration weighed in on these issues because the TVA is a named defendant. Though the administration emphasized that the court had never confronted a case with so many possible plaintiffs or defendants and urged the court not to let the case proceed, the government's position departed from that of the petitioners in a few notable respects. The government concluded that the state satisfied Article III standing based on Massachusetts versus EPA, which the petitioners had attempted to distinguish on the basis that the court predicated its conclusions on the presence of the statute that was being enforced through a specific provision for judicial review. Further, the government emphasized prudential standing rather than constitutional standing and sought displacement as a key ground for decision, encouraging the court to avoid some of the threshold gating questions emphasized by the petitioners. Indeed, the Solicitor General's rhetoric sounded remarkably like an argument under the political question doctrine, something Justice Kagan remarked on at oral argument. Nonetheless, the government wanted the court to make EPA regulatory action a key underpinning of any displacement analysis, perhaps recognizing that such a conclusion would provide the EPA added leverage in its regulatory efforts. At argument, all of the justices were skeptical of the breadth of the state's position and the task they would impose on a single district judge. That skepticism drove the opinion that came out on June 20th. In that opinion, though the court split evenly on the standing question, all eight justices participating concluded that the case could not proceed. The court did not address whether federal common law provides the cause of action claimed, ruling instead that the Clean Air Act displaced whatever federal common law might exist. The court determined that the plaintiff's claims couldn't stand because Congress displaced federal common law regarding carbon dioxide emissions when it adopted the Clean Air Act. The court noted that the displacement of federal common law requires only that the statute speak directly to the question at issue. Here, the court found that the Clean Air Act directs the EPA to identify stationary sources that cause or contribute to air pollution, to regulate existing sources, and to establish performance standards for new or modified sources. The court noted that states and private parties are entitled to petition for rulemaking and can challenge in court any regulations that ultimately emerge or the lack of any regulations. Given all this, the court found no room for a parallel track under federal common law. Importantly, the court specifically rejected the argument that federal common law is not displaced until the EPA actually exercises its authority in the manner sought by the plaintiffs. Rather, Justice Ginsburg, writing for the court, emphasized that the critical point is Congress's delegation that displaces federal common law. She explained that, indeed, were EPA to decline to regulate carbon dioxide emissions altogether, the federal courts would have no warrant to employ the federal common law of nuisance to upset that determination. This point was hotly contested at oral argument, and the language Justice Ginsburg included in the opinion represents a victory for the energy companies. The court also made clear that it views itself as a deferential but effective backstop to decision-making properly made by Congress and the EPA in the first instance. The court took pains to remind litigants, including the EPA, that its action will be subject to judicial review under the arbitrary and capricious standard, but emphasized that determining how to regulate emissions requires complex balancing that the Clean Air Act assigns to EPA in the first instance. Clearly underlying this analysis was intense discomfort with the enterprise proposed by the plaintiffs, which would have placed federal district courts on the front lines of emissions regulation. In finding that the EPA is best suited to serve as the primary regulator, the court recognized that it would be problematic to rely on district judges issuing ad hoc, case-by-case injunctions. The court noted that district courts lack scientific, economic, and technical resources of an agency, and that judges lack authority to bind other district judges. Thus, the entire court clearly understood and rejected the task that plaintiffs sought to assign federal judges, worrying that they would be turned into mini-EPAs. Notably, despite the court's clear internal division over certain issues, notably the 4-4 split on standing, the opinion did not draw lengthy or numerous concurring opinions. A very short separate opinion by Justice Alito, joined by Justice Thomas, agreed with the court's disposition, but only on the assumption that the interpretation of the Clean Air Act in Massachusetts versus EPA is correct, and noting that no party had challenged it. So at least some members of the court remain unconvinced by that earlier decision and skeptical of federal courts' authority to entertain climate change suits at all. Though unanimous, the opinion in AEP is not wholly satisfying because it leaves many important legal issues unresolved. By determining that this specific federal common law nuisance claim was displaced by the Clean Air Act, it failed to address the scope of the federal common law generally and did not have occasion to address whether and how the Clean Air Act impacts state law. So, the court's decision does not end global warming litigation. Kivalina is still to be argued in the Ninth, and Comer has been refiled. No doubt, those plaintiffs will try to distinguish their cases as based on damages, while the AEP plaintiffs sought an injunction. The court's decision does stand as an obstacle to global warming suits, both doctrinally and in the very clear message sent by the entire court about how poorly suited these cases are for judicial, as opposed to political, resolution. Several interesting legal issues remain to be litigated. The next front may focus on whether state common law is preempted by the Clean Air Act and on any particular EPA action. This issue was debated at oral argument in AEP and may make the EPA's decision-making all the more critical. Even though the court made clear that such action wasn't key to the displacement analysis, and there remain field and conflict arguments about the Clean Air Act, what the EPA says in its decisions about the role of state law may be important to agency preemption arguments. Furthermore, the Article III standing question, which the Solicitor General characterized as close, is still open in all the other federal circuits than the Second and under any applicable state standing doctrines. The court's decision in the end resolves some important questions and clearly forecloses the use of federal common law to abate global warming. Because the court unanimously emphasized how ill-suited judges are to adjudicate these sort of claims, federal and state judges confronted with the next phase of climate change lawsuits may be even more reluctant to wade into claims seeking to assign liability for these ubiquitous greenhouse gases which have uncertain international and aggregated effects. As Justice Ginsburg acknowledged, every person in business contributes to global warming, and the legislature is the best branch suited to balance what she characterized as difficult economic, social, and environmental trade-offs.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.